Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 9th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Industry Reacts to Oil Ban. Quotes, Region's political energy leaders urge emphasis on domestic production. President Biden finally heeded our calls to ban Russian oil and gas imports into the U.S., but he continues to demonize American-made energy. Instead of calling producers in the Permian Basin to fill the gap, he is calling dictators in Venezuela to ramp up production. West Texas stands ready to provide for our needs. I will continue to pressure the Biden administration to put Midland over Moscow and unleash American energy. Signed, U.S. Representative August Pfluger, District 11. The Permian Basin Petroleum Association stands with the people of Ukraine, and we support the efforts that Congress and the Biden administration are taking to halt the import of Russian oil and refined products. Unfortunately, today, the president's spokeswoman attacked the domestic oil and gas industry for, quote, deliberately sitting on over 9,000 federal leases, unquote. The statement that the oil and natural gas industry is intentionally sitting on 9,100-plus permits that could be used to produce oil and gas is categorically false. It often takes years to acquire right-of-way and additional permits for gathering lines to service site. A permit can only be productive when the industry can access capital and financing. Infrastructure to move the resources, pipelines, export terminals, etc., is blocked by burdensome regulations. Meanwhile, the administration is checking the Rolodex looking for other dictators who could come to our aid and increase supply. Domestic energy producers, peace-loving, hard-working Americans right here in the Permian Basin stand ready to help fill the void. Unfortunately, that doesn't fit this administration's narrative. The administration has worked with anti-oil and gas activists to slow pipeline infrastructure. Without pipelines to move the oil and natural gas produced, wells cannot be developed. Capital must be acquired. Activist investors, encouraged by an administration intent on expanding its financial regulatory powers, have worked to debank and decapitalize the industry. Many companies, particularly the small independents, are having difficulty acquiring the credit and capital necessary to develop. By calling off bureaucratic efforts to deny financing to the industry, the president would send a strong signal to the market that investments in oil and natural gas are safe and new production could move forward. Signed, Ben Shepard, President, Permian Basin Petroleum Association. President Biden's decision to ban Russian energy imports means domestic production is now more important than ever. Texas producers stand ready to meet growing demand for oil and natural gas. The Lone Star State has been and will continue to lead the nation in domestic energy production, and we embrace the role we play in establishing U.S. energy security. The Biden administration should encourage more domestic oil and natural gas production, including restarting leasing on federal lands and positioning U.S. liquefied natural gas, LNG, as the alternative to Russian gas for our global allies. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, must also change its policy guidance to remove impediments for developing U.S. energy infrastructure and should expedite pending applications to expand operating capacity at 3 already approved LNG export facilities. And finally, the White House should convene an emergency council of U.S. operators to discuss and execute strategies to increase domestic production, to support the efforts of our allies and trade partners, to diversify their supply of oil and natural gas to prevent disruptions in global energy supplies. Signed, Ed Longenecker, President, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. This crisis should be a wake-up call that we need strategic American energy policy that treats oil and natural gas as an asset and not a liability. The suffering of consumers at the pump underscores the importance of domestic energy production, and American consumers are feeling the repercussions of canceled pipeline projects, delayed approvals for permits, and the discouragement of additional expansion. Poor decisions, all exacerbated by the war. The administration calling on foreign countries to increase production a few months ago, rather than encouraging local jobs and local investment, had a chilling effect on expansion. This tragic event should help reset American priorities and recognize that American oil and natural gas are produced in more environmentally responsible ways than in any other country in the world. U.S. companies have strong commitments to address concerns about our climate while providing the oil and natural gas that fuels modern life and keeps nations secure. Signed, Todd Staples, President, Texas Oil and Gas Association. We support the U.S. government and our allies in their collective efforts against Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine, and our industry is prepared to comply with the import ban in response to this aggression. The industry has already taken significant and meaningful steps to unwind relationships, both with respect to assets in Russia as well as imports of Russian crude oil and refined products. We share the goal of reducing reliance on foreign energy sources and urge policymakers to advance American energy leadership and expand domestic production to counter Russia's influence in global energy markets. Signed, Mike Sommers, President and Chief Executive Officer, American Petroleum Institute. This article was compiled by Mella McEwen, Midland Reporter Telegram. This article is entitled Impact: Shale Producers to Boost Output as World Tightens Sanctions on Russia, by Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. U.S. crude production is set to continue climbing as surging oil prices following Russia's attack on Ukraine prompt producers to drill even more. This year's production forecast will rise to 12 million barrels a day from an earlier projection of 11.97 million, the EIA said in its monthly short-term energy outlook report. Oil output will average 13 million barrels a day in 2023, an increase from its previous estimate of 12.6 million, according to Energy Information Administration data. The current all-time high of 12.3 million barrels a day was set in 2019. Oil prices have soared to their highest in at least a decade since the war's start set off a cascade of international sanctions intended to isolate Russia. The U.S. and U.K. have banned Russian imports, and most oil companies have chosen to avoid doing business with the country, sparking fears of a supply crisis. OPEC Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo warned this week that the world doesn't have sufficient oil production capacity to replace Russia's contribution to crude markets. The U.S. government has been reaching out to major oil producers, including Venezuela, which is under sanctions, to find replacements for Russian oil. It has also been working to restore a nuclear pact with Iran that would allow that country's oil to return to the market. The agency raised its forecasts for international benchmark Brent and West Texas Intermediate crude at least $20 a barrel through 2023, compared with the previous report. Meanwhile, global consumption of petroleum and liquid fuels is set to average 100.6 million barrels a day this year, up 3.1 million from 2021, according to the report. Next year, demand would add another 1.9 million to 102.6 million barrels a day. The agency noted that economic forecasts were completed before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Oil consumption will depend on how economic activity and travel respond to recent and any potential future events and sanctions, the report said. This is the Community from the Front page. This article is entitled Child Abuse Reports Up 130% Since February by Stuart Doreen. We have seen a 130% increase in the reported alleged child abuse cases since February 16th. That was information provided by Justin Waldrop, Director of Outreach and Development for the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center. February 16th was the date when five administrators/staff members at Midland Christian School were arrested, charged with failure to report with intent to conceal, neglect, or abuse, a state felony. On February 25th, four administrators from Trinity School of Midland were arrested and charged with the same felony. Both sets of arrests had to do with alleged assaults involving students. It is a sad circumstance, Waldrop said of the arrests, but awareness is heightened when there are cases that are high profile. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman echoed that point in February when he told the Reporter-Telegram that one incident begat the other, in that once the first arrests were reported, it made it more likely that a person came forward at another campus. As far as the recent increase in cases reported since mid-February, Waldrop said a lot of people don't realize the amount of child abuse that takes place in the area. The MRCCAC reported this week that 2,119 forensic interviews were performed from 2019 to 2021, including 753 in 2019 and 736 in 2021. A high-profile incident brings some of it to light, but is the tip of the iceberg, Waldrop said. Other services provided in 2021 included 4,561 hours of therapy, structured education to 18,259 children provided, 9,889 hours of volunteer service provided, 92 victims had SANE exams, and central officials accompanied 82 to exams, 648 hotline calls answered. An increase of reported abuse cases happened during the initial stages of the COVID pandemic, especially when lockdowns of schools and businesses took place and people didn't leave home, officials said. As the community opened up, the Children's Advocacy Center still reported limitations on the number of schools where presentations could be made. Waldrop said that number is up to 53, which he said is a low number. COVID put us back in a holding pattern of being in schools, Waldrop said. We're finally getting back to where we belong. The Children's Advocacy Center suggests abuse or neglect can be reported at 1-800-252-5400 or online at txabusehotline.org. MRCCAC offers training and education for individuals, organizations, schools, and companies on the warning signs of child abuse, the most common of which are listed below. Unexplained injuries, changes in behavior, fear of certain places or people, changes in eating, changes in sleeping, changes in school performance and attendance, lack of personal care or hygiene, risk-taking behaviors, inappropriate sexual behaviors. This article is entitled Federal Grand Jury Indicts Aghorn Operating, Inc. by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Note, an indictment is merely an allegation, and all defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. A federal grand jury in Midland returned an indictment charging an oil field company and an executive of the company with worker safety and environmental crimes, according to a release from the Department of Justice. According to court documents, Aghorn Operating, Inc. owns and operates oil wells and leases in Texas. Aghorn and Trent Day, vice president of Aghorn, were indicted for violating the Clean Air Act relating to releases of hydrogen sulfide from an Aghorn facility, as well as obstructing an Occupational Safety and Health Administration investigation. Aghorn was also charged with three worker safety OSHA crimes for causing the death of an Aghorn employee, the news release stated. In addition, Aghorn and Day, along with another corporation, Kodiak Roustabout, Inc., were charged with violating the Safe Drinking Water Act and making false statements regarding the mechanical integrity of Aghorn injection wells in forms and pressure charts filed with the Railroad Commission. The charges are the result of an investigation of the October 26, 2019 death of Aghorn employee Jacob Dean and his wife Natalie Dean. Both were overcome by hydrogen sulfide, a poisonous gas, at an Aghorn facility in Odessa. Our nation's environmental laws are designed to protect our communities and workers from hazardous pollutants, said Assistant Special Agent in Charge Todd Tony Adams of EPA's Southwest Area Criminal Investigation Program in the news release. Today's indictment demonstrate that companies intentionally violating those laws and endangering others will be held responsible for their crimes. According to the allegations in the indictment, on the night of the incident, Jacob Dean responded to a call to check the pump house at the facility, an enclosed building with two bay doors. His wife, Natalie Dean, knew where Jacob had gone and started calling him when he did not return in a timely manner. When those calls went unanswered, Natalie drove to the station with her two children, aged 9 and 6. A pump had failed in the pump house, causing a leak of produced water containing hydrogen sulfide. Jacob had been overcome by hydrogen sulfide in the pump house, and when Natalie arrived at the station, she exited the vehicle and proceeded to the pump house, where she too was overcome by the gas. Both Jacob and Natalie were found dead by the first responders to the scene. The indictment stated, Aghorn was aware that its produced water contained high amounts of H2S, as well as the deadly nature of the gas. Aghorn and Trent Day allegedly knowingly violated their general duty to prevent the accidental release of hydrogen sulfide, and also knowingly placed another person in imminent danger of death or serious bodily injury. The Associated Press reported that a receptionist at Aghorn said the company would have no comment. A law firm that has represented Aghorn in the past did not immediately return a message seeking comment, according to the Associated Press. OSHA began an investigation 2 days later. The indictment alleges that Aghorn and Day obstructed the OSHA investigation, arising out of statements made by Day to OSHA in two separate interviews. If convicted, a federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. This article is entitled Domestic Output to Soften Impact of Surging Prices by Vincent Gall, Bloomberg. Any increased capital spending by U.S. oil and gas producers in response to the surge in crude price should help soften the blow to the economy from an unexpected pullback in consumer spending. It just won't be anytime soon. Americans in the last week have witnessed an unprecedented weekly surge in gasoline prices, now up to $4.17 a gallon, based on American Automobile Association data. Prices are likely to go up even more as President Joe Biden details plans to ban imports of Russian energy. Economists at Credit Suisse Group AG and Barclays PLC say that'll incentivize greater domestic production, which should help alleviate some of the economic fallout. At the same time, increases in domestic oil production are likely to take time, and most producers are exercising greater capital discipline than before. It may take 6 to 9 months to see a more meaningful increase in U.S. shale output, Gapin said. Before the start of war in Ukraine, producers were gradually adding to rig counts amid shareholder demands of capital discipline and government policy geared toward green energy. Moreover, supply and labor constraints have also been headwinds to a faster pace of production. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Jurgen, Biden Needs to Reach Out to U.S. Oil Industry, by Gerson Freitas Jr. and Kriti Gupta, Bloomberg. The time has come for the Biden administration to reach out and restore the U.S. government's historical ties with the oil industry, energy historian Daniel Jurgen said. Although President Joe Biden has directly asked OPEC Plus to pump more crude to tame energy prices, he hasn't made similar overtures to the explorers at home. But with prices now surging, the U.S. government needs to be able to work closely with producers, like in previous times of crisis, to avoid what could become an emergency if the situation in Ukraine persists for another few weeks, Jurgen said. That would mark a shift for the current administration, which has been more focused on the transition into green energy, he said. It's now time to build those channels of communication, and it has to come from the government reaching out in a non-confrontational way, Jurgen said in a Bloomberg TV interview during CERA Week by S&P Global. Energy security fell off the table in the U.S. as we became self-sufficient in energy. And in fact, it was like amnesia. It was not only taken for granted, it's just forgotten. This article is entitled, Oil Ends at Decade High, by Bloomberg. Oil had its biggest daily swing ever, with Brent surging to nearly $140. After the U.S. said it was considering a ban on Russian petroleum imports. The international benchmark subsequently pulled back to settle at the highest price since 2012. In New York, West Texas Intermediate closed at the highest in nearly 14 years. Prices from oil to nickel to wheat are surging to new highs, exacerbating fears of a major inflationary shock to the global economy. Oil jumped at the market's open on news the Biden administration is mulling whether to prohibit Russian oil imports without the participation of allies in Europe, at least initially, according to people familiar with the matter. Prices pared gains after Germany said it has no plans to halt Russian energy imports, bolstering the volatility in the market. Meanwhile, Russian and Ukrainian officials said talks between the two nations failed to yield results. Brent for May settlement ended 4.3% higher at $123.21 a barrel after rising to $139.13 earlier. West Texas Intermediate for April settled up 3.2% at $119.40. The U.S. is staring down the barrel of a supply crisis, said Louise Dixon, Rystad Energy's senior oil market analyst. An outright export ban on Russian crude from the U.S. and its allies could remove as much as 4 million barrels a day from the market, and participation from China and India would take out even more. Surging oil prices and supply fears are also raising the price of fuels. Diesel futures in Europe and the U.S. touched the highest in decades. The so-called prompt spread for diesel on Europe's intercontinental exchange surged to a record. U.S. gasoline futures also surged to the most on record in data going back to 2005. American pump prices are just 5 cents a gallon away from an all-time high set 14 years ago. Record prices of oil and other commodities are raising alarm bells everywhere. The International Monetary Fund over the weekend warned of severe consequences for the global economy. Major oil importers are starting to come under pressure, with the rupee among the biggest currency losers in Asia, amid fears the Reserve Bank of India will have to raise its inflation forecast, but have little scope to tighten monetary policy. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told NBC over the weekend that the White House is in, quote, very active discussions, unquote, with Europe about a ban to tighten the economic squeeze on Putin. But most buyers are refusing to take it anyway, resulting in an embargo in all but name. At one point Monday, Brent was up $21 as the market adjusted to the possibility of losing supplies from one of the world's top three producers. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company said Brent could end the year at $185 a barrel if Russian shipments continue to be disrupted, while one hedge fund said even $200 was a possibility. "We have plenty of twists and turns to come," Mike Muller, Vital Group's head of Asia, said Sunday on a podcast produced by Dubai-based consultant and publisher Gulf Intelligence. "While I think the world is already pricing in the fact there'll be an inability to take in a serious amount of Russian oil in the Western Hemisphere, I don't think we've priced in everything yet." Brent's recent swings are eclipsing those seen during the global financial crisis of 2008 and the demand plunge sparked by the coronavirus pandemic. Traders, shippers, insurers, and banks have been increasingly wary of taking on or funding purchases of Russian barrels as they navigate international financial sanctions. There are efforts underway to try to increase supply. Two senior U.S. officials met with members of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's government in Caracas to discuss global oil supplies and the country's ties to Russia, according to people familiar with the matter. Iran, meanwhile, made progress toward a deal with world powers over its nuclear program, which could pave the way for sanctions on Tehran's oil to be lifted by the third quarter. More immediately, though, supply from some of the other biggest producers continues to be a worry. OPEC member Libya said its output fell below 1 million barrels a day because of a domestic political crisis. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies last week also decided to stay the course with only gradual output increases. This article is entitled, "U.S. Gasoline Prices Rise Again on Talk of Banning Russian Oil," by David Koenig, AP business writer. Gasoline prices are pushing even farther above $4 a gallon, the highest price that American motorists have faced since July 2008, as calls grow to ban imports of Russian oil. Prices at the pump were rising long before Russia invaded Ukraine and have spiraled faster since the start of the war. The U.S. national average for a gallon of gasoline has soared 45 cents a gallon in the past week and topped $4.06 on Monday, according to Auto Club AAA. "I am looking at the possibility of walking to work," said Asaya Joseph, who had just paid $4.29 a gallon at a BP station in Brooklyn, New York. "This is the first time that I am filling up my tank in like 10 days. The price of regular broke $4 a gallon on Sunday for the first time in nearly 14 years and is now up nearly 50% from a year ago. The price is even higher in Europe, averaging €1.75 per liter last week, according to the European Commission, the equivalent of $7.21 per gallon. Gas Buddy, which tracks prices down to the service station level, said Monday that the U.S. was likely to break its record price of $4.10 a gallon, but that does not account for inflation. In today's terms, the record price would be equal to about $5.24 after accounting for inflation. Forget the $4 per gallon mark. The nation will soon set new all-time record highs, and we could push closer to a national average of $4.50, said Gas Buddy analyst Patrick DeHaan. We've never been in this situation before with this level of uncertainty. Americans will be feeling the pain of the rise in prices for quite some time. Energy prices are contributing to the worst inflation that Americans have seen in 40 years, far outpacing higher wages. Consumer prices jumped 7.5% in January compared with a year earlier, and analysts predict a 7.9% increase when the government reports February figures later this week. Oil prices soared early Monday before retreating. Benchmark U.S. crude surged to $130 a barrel overnight, then moderated to around $119, a 3% gain in afternoon trading. The international price skyrocketed to $139 before falling back to about $123 a barrel. Major U.S. stock indexes were down more than 2%. The United States is the world's largest oil producer, ahead of Saudi Arabia and Russia, but it is also the biggest oil consumer, and it can't meet that staggering demand with domestic crude alone. The U.S. imported 245 million barrels of oil from Russia last year, about 8% of all U.S. oil imports, up from 198 million barrels in 2020. That's less than the U.S. gets from Canada or Mexico, but more than it imported last year from Saudi Arabia. The increasingly violent Russian attack on Ukraine has increased calls to cut off Russia from the money it gets from oil and natural gas exports. Europe is heavily dependent on Russian gas. President Joe Biden has been reluctant to ban Russian oil, fearing it could further fuel inflation heading into the midterm elections. Many Republicans and a growing number of Democrats in the House and Senate, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat California, have endorsed banning Russian crude as a way to put more pressure on Russian President Vladimir Putin. The White House hasn't ruled out a ban, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Sunday that the United States and its allies were discussing a ban, quote, while making sure that there is still an appropriate supply of oil, unquote, on the world market. This article is entitled, Buffett Chips Away at Cash Pile with Bigger Occidental Bet, by Catherine Chiglinski, Bloomberg. Warren Buffett's high-class problem of too much cash and too few opportunities may be easing. His Berkshire Hathaway Inc. disclosed Friday that it had snapped up almost 30 million additional shares of Occidental Petroleum Corporation, worth roughly $1.6 billion midday Monday, amid volatility in stocks due to a potential ban on Russian oil that sent the price of crude surging. That purchase helped put some of the conglomerate's near-record $146.7 billion pile of cash to work. Buffett and his team also have two other potential ways to deploy funds lurking on the horizon, including buying out the now-deceased Walter Scott's position in Berkshire's energy business and snapping up more of Pilot Travel Centers LLC, increasing its ownership to a majority stake, according to Edward Jones analyst Jim Shanahan. Berkshire's cash balance has been rising steadily in recent years, and the only significant use of cash has been for share repurposes, Shanahan said in a note to clients Monday. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, March 9th. Carolyn Barnes. Carolyn Jo Barnes, 76, passed from this life peacefully on Friday, March 4th, at her son Kevin's home under his care. She was born Monday, July 9, 1945, in Mitchell County, Texas, to May Finley and James Klein. Those left to cherish her memory are her sons, Kevin Barnes, Robbie Barnes and wife Debbie, Rocky Barnes, special friends Alice Huff, Amor Carrillo, Hortensia Carrillo, Robert and Mona Quiroz, sister Mary Frances Graves, Sandy Noel, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Jo is preceded in death by her parents, brother James Klein, sisters Kathy Walker, Dorothy Cohen, Shirley Randolph, and grandchildren Megan Barnes and Jared Barnes. Graveside services are scheduled for Monday, March 10th at 2 p.m. in Stanton at Evergreen Cemetery, officiated by David Harp. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. John Dorn. John Dorn passed away on February 14th at age 94. John Chapman Dorn was born on June 24th in 1927 in Bradford, Pennsylvania. He is survived by his wife, Bobby, as well as children, Rebecca Dorn of Red Bank, New Jersey, Leslie Dorn and Timothy Dorn of El Dorado, Texas, and Stephen Dorn of Fort Worth, Texas, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, charitable donations can be made for research at Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York or Midland Memorial Hospital. The family is planning a memorial in late June. Gary Dale Ree. Gary Dale Ree, 85, of Midland, passed away March 5th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 11th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 12th at Bellevue Baptist Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Effie Roberts. Effie Roberts, 61, of Midland, passed away on Monday, March 7th. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 12th at the Downtown Church of Christ, with Greg Fleming officiating. Services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Jose Baeza. Jose Baeza, 23, of Midland, passed away March 5th. Funeral Mass will be Wednesday, March 9th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Manuela Tercero Luján. Manuela Tercero Luján, 86, of Midland, passed away on March 6th. Viewing will be Wednesday, March 9th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited that evening at 6:30 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, March 10th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Marshall Ray Floyd. Marshall Ray Floyd, 80, of De Leon, passed away Sunday, March 6th. He was born December 7th, 1941, in Gorman, Texas, to H.C. and Norma R. Fuqua Floyd. The Floyd family will receive friends for visitation Saturday, March 12th, from 10 to 11 a.m. at Nolan Andrews Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will start at 11 a.m., with Brother Kenneth Wilson officiating. Interment will follow in Desdemona Cemetery. Ruth N. Bird Henderson. Ruth N. Bird Henderson, 89, of Midland, passed away on March 5th. Viewing will be Sunday, March 13th, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Monday, March 14th at 10 a.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
Hello, this is Connie reading the Odessa American local and state obituaries and death notices for Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. Headlines read, Pfluger, Biden's embargo falls short. Congressman says reliance on foreign countries unnecessary, by Bob Campbell. Washington. Congressman August Pfluger said Tuesday afternoon that the embargo on Russian oil that President Biden had announced earlier in the day was a good first step, but it should be followed by an administration-backed ramp-up of energy production in the Permian Basin and elsewhere in the nation. Why is the president even calling Venezuela and Saudi Arabia when we need to unleash our production forces here at home and prioritize Midland over Moscow? Pfluger said, referring to legislation he filed 3 weeks ago. We have the capacity to do it, and we need to cut the red tape and approve a half dozen LNG, liquefied natural gas, exports terminals on the Gulf Coast between Texas and Louisiana. That would increase our LNG capacity by 20%. The San Angelo Republican, who represents Ector and Midland counties in the 11th Congressional District, said his Midland over Moscow bill has gained support in Tuesday press conferences from House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Natural Resources Committee Ranking Member Bruce Westerman, and Republican Garrett Graves from Louisiana, and Republican Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington, along with 50 other House members, including some Democrats. Having declared his admiration and support of Ukrainian President Zelensky following a visit to Ukraine just before Russia's February 24th invasion, Pfluger said Biden's refusal to oppose the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline from Russia to Germany by asking the United Nations to condemn it was largely to blame for the war. Germany halted the construction after the invasion. Pfluger said Russian President Putin desired to get control of Ukraine's agriculture and its temperate seaport at Odessa. Ukraine on the Black Sea had to be part of the calculus, but keeping the ability to pipe Russian natural gas to Germany and Europe was the main factor that clearly Putin's way to invade. We must use American producers to regain our dominance on the world stage in the oil and gas industry, not only for our domestic needs, but also so our partners and allies will not be dependent on actors like Russia, China, and Iran, the congressman had said in a news release. In a Tuesday morning statement, U.S. Senator John Cornyn of Texas said Biden, while looking to ban Russian oil, was considering encouraging authoritarian governments like Venezuela's to fill the American energy gap instead of harnessing production in his own country. There are media reports today that the administration is considering easing sanctions on Venezuelan oil to compensate for what we import from Russia, Cornyn said. But I have to ask, why on earth would we trade one oil-rich dictator for another one? Instead, here's a novel concept, perhaps that the administration would consider. Why don't we boost our own production from here in the United States and sell it across the globe? It's truly shocking that this administration is so against and so opposed to American oil and gas that they'd rather make it easier to buy oil from the Maduro regime than from here at home in America. It's simply unfathomable and inexcusable. In his Tuesday news conference, Biden said the U.S. is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy by banning imports of Russian oil in the latest sanction intended to punish Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. We will not be part of subsidizing Putin's war, Biden said in the Roosevelt Room at the White House. His announcement came amid rising pressure from Democrats and Republicans, and it reflected a willingness to accept the political risk of rising gas prices to economically retaliate against Russia, the Associated Press reported. Defending freedom is going to cost, Biden said. It's going to cost us as well in the United States. Although Biden has tried to work in concert with European allies, he acknowledged that many are not announcing a similar ban because they're more reliant on Moscow for oil and gas. So we can take this step when others cannot, he said. But we're working closely with Europe and other partners to develop a long-term strategy to reduce their dependence on Russian energy as well. Laughter and Tears Shared During Workshop by Michael Bauer. More than 300 attendees laughed, cried, and celebrated International Women's Day during the Odessa Chamber of Commerce first in-person women's workshop Tuesday at the Odessa Marriott. The event, which was called She Can, featured speakers as well as networking breaks with pop-up shopping and local vendors and a roundtable discussion. Last year, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce put on a similar event that was only held virtually due to the pandemic and featured a panel discussion with local women. That event was successful enough to be brought back to a larger setting this year. Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earls said at the time that the thought was, if COVID goes away, we'd want to expand on this event, and here we are, a year later, expanding this event, and also, instead of an hour long, it is now 5 hours long. The often emotional day featured speakers both local and national, with topics as diverse as human trafficking and self-reflection. Texas Tech University Health Science Center President Dr. Lori Rice Spearman, along with local community leader and former city council member Peggy Dean, kicked off the morning session. Rice Spearman told the crowd of mostly women that she woke up today in my childhood bedroom and how Odessa shaped her life. She is the first female president of the Texas Tech Health Science System. She is a product of Permian High School, Odessa College, and Texas Tech. She praised the many positive influence she had growing up and those who encouraged her to follow her passion for science. She encouraged the crowd to take notes and take action to conquer their dreams. Likewise, NFL sports agent, author, and attorney Kelly Masters also spoke about tackling life goals while also looking both inward and to God. She said she spent too many years trying to be perfect and to project that she had it all together. I looked around and realized I had done all of this achieving, racked up goals, and felt like a failure. What if I don't accomplish anything again or let my parents down? What if I had let God down? She said she came to the realization that despite her successes, she felt empty and she needed to acknowledge that fear was causing an empty feeling in her life. She said, "Thank goodness for praying grandmas and those who prayed over me. I surrendered and said, I am just going to give everything to God, and for the first time in my life, I'm not going to care what anyone else thinks. I just want to be who God made me to be." Masters was the keynote speaker. In addition to being a sports agent and an attorney, Master, who comes from Oklahoma, is also the founder and president of KMM Sports, which is a full-service sports management company with offices in New York, Los Angeles, and her hometown of Oklahoma City. Lisa Bowne, CEO and founder of Reflections Ministries, along with Karen Carlson, the education director at Reflections, held a panel discussion on human trafficking moderated by Earls. Bowne was open about her own experience as a victim of trafficking and spoke about how Reflections is working to help others who have been victimized. She said the Permian Basin is number 5 on the list of most trafficked 6 victims. Both Carlson and Bowne detailed how important it is to get involved and to help others in whatever capacity available, whether that is volunteering to teach a life skill class or writing a check. Murder trial begins in Ector County by Kim Smith. When Natividad Cerda left his brother's house after an evening of eating barbecue and drinking beer with his family, everyone was getting along just fine, and even when he heard gunshots a few hours later, he didn't think anything of it. Everything changed when his brother came pounding on his door, Cerda told an Ector County jury Tuesday morning. Cerda testified he woke up on the morning of August 11, 2018, to his brother Rodrigo at his door asking for help. He said he'd found their nephew, Jacob Escobedo, 30, on the ground outside his house, Cerda said. Initially, Rodrigo said he thought the young man was asleep, but now feared he was dead. Cerda told jurors he rushed across the street and found Escobedo on his back in the dirt. A closer look revealed a gunshot wound in his chest and his arms. Realizing he was dead, Cerda said he called 911. Tuesday was the first day in the first-degree murder trial of Macel Marquez Hernandez, 33. Retired Judge Jay Gibson is presiding over the trial in the 358th District Court. Assistant Carmen Villalobos walked Cerda, the first witness in the trial, through the events of August 10th and 11th, 2018. Cerda explained that he, his brother Rodrigo Escobedo, and Hernandez all worked together in a family-owned masonry company, and they all lived on Cohen Street in Pleasant Farms. He and his wife, Rosa, lived in a home across the street from Rodrigo and their mother, Ann Hernandez, and Jacob lived together about a quarter of a mile down the road. On August 10th, he and his wife, Ann Hernandez, headed to Walmart together and picked up some chicken, Cerda said. While they were there, Hernandez asked Cerda to buy him ammunition for his 9mm handgun, but he declined, telling Hernandez he had some ammo at home or Hernandez could buy his own. When they got home, Cerda testified they went over to Rodrigo's house and spent the next few hours eating chicken and drinking beer. He and his wife left somewhere between 10:30 and 11:30 p.m. and Rodrigo Hernandez and Escobedo were still outside drinking, Cerda said. His mother, who had Alzheimer's, was inside. Cerda said he and Rosa went to bed. They woke up in the middle of the night when their dog began barking, heard a couple of gunshots, but went back to sleep. Because gunshots aren't unknown in Pleasant Farms, he said. Rodrigo came to the door and woke him about 7:30 a.m., he said. When he went across the street with his brother, Hernandez wasn't there, Cerda testified. During her opening statement, Villalobos told jurors investigators immediately wanted to talk to Hernandez because he was the last known person to have spent time with Escobedo. They found him 12 hours later at his girlfriend's house in Odessa. Hernandez told investigators he and Escobedo began arguing inside a pickup truck after Escobedo told him he needed to pick up the slack at work, Villalobos said. The defendant confessed that he reached across the seat of the pickup truck and shot Escobedo through the driver's side window after Escobedo stepped out of the vehicle, Villalobos said. He also admitted to getting out of the truck and shooting him again multiple times. Hernandez told investigators he shot Escobedo in self-defense after Escobedo threw a beer bottle at him. But Villalobos said the evidence will show his life was not in any imminent type of danger. Instead of calling Rodrigo Cerda or 911 for help, Hernandez instead walked 3 hours to his girlfriend's house, leaving his cousin to die, Villalobos said. While being questioned by defense attorney Kevin Acker, Cerda insisted he never heard his nephews arguing, either at work or at the barbecue. Former Ector County Sheriff's Investigator Cody Smith told jurors that when he and other sheriff's office personnel arrived at Hernandez's girlfriend's house, she allowed them inside. They found Hernandez face down on the bed, his hands underneath him. When Hernandez refused to show his hands, Smith testified he forced him to the ground and handcuffed him. During the scuffle, a 9mm handgun fell to the ground. Smith said it had one round in the chamber and three in the magazine. Smith and former crime scene investigator Shirley Hardy testified Escobedo appeared to have been shot in the left chest, near his left armpit, and in his left bicep. He had another wound to his bicep and to his back, but it was unclear to them if they were entrance or exit wounds. Hardy also testified 4 spent shell casings were found at the scene, all from a 9mm handgun. She told jurors she collected a tequila bottle, a beer bottle, and numerous beer cans from the scene. During cross-examination from Acker, Hardy said she did not send the tequila bottle or beer bottle in for DNA or fingerprint analysis because investigators didn't request such test. Acker told jurors he'll be given his opening statement after Villalobos and First Assistant District Attorney Greg Barber concludes their case. Jurors will not hear from Rodrigo Cerda. He and brother's mother died last year.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.